Big show for you here today, an electric weekend of wild card games to talk through. Scott Pienowski joins me to do just that as we break down every single game from multiple different angles. What went right for the winners? What are the fallout for some of the losers? And some 2026 fantasy takes all throughout as well. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because it was a hell of a weekend of football. Wild card weekend was absolutely electric, and here to break it all down with me is our guy, Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, Matt. I got that bounce in my step that I think you do. We had five games that have already been played, and like four of them were outstanding. All of them were competitive, and certainly interesting storylines to break down. So when the playoffs are like this or this good, it's a reward. Next week, we'll get the number one seeds back into play. There's already some matchups we're excited about. But yeah, just as a football fan, I felt invigorated the whole weekend with comebacks, with upsets, with great play, with questionable strategy at times. Just all the reasons you love football were underscored the last 48 hours.
Oh, man, couldn't agree more with what you just said there. It was that bounce in the step for sure is one because of the games, 100%. I was also up until like past 1 a.m. last night, breaking it down live with Nate Tice on Football 301. So shout out to the new espresso machine that my wife and I bought, because I definitely needed that this morning because it was a late night. But I'm still invigorated, not just by the caffeine, but by the football that we watched this weekend, because it was fantastic. We have a ton to break down here today. We're going to recap the games. We're going to discuss performances from the winners, fallout for the losers, some things that actually might matter for the 2026 fantasy season. And what a weekend it was, man. 12 lead changes, more than any in postseason history, and we've still got one game to go, so we shall see what the Texans and the Steelers have for us this evening. But let's recap the games that we have seen so far, and let's go back to the beginning, because I actually think this is the most fun way to do it, because the Saturday games, in my opinion, were the two best of the weekend. Let's start it off with the first game here, Rams 34, Panthers 31. Let's start with the winners here, as we always do on these recaps. Scott, the Rams avoided a disaster at the hand of the Carolina Panthers. This was a close competitive game. It was very back and forth. Ultimately, the Rams are able to pull it out on a fantastic throw and catch from Matthew Stafford to Colby Parkinson.
Yeah, the Rams back in business. They get Devontae Adams in uniform. They get 31 targets to Puka Nacua and Adams. They have a tight end touchdown, which they usually do. If you could draft somebody named Rams tight end, you'd have 18 touchdowns in your bank. So the offense did its job. I think the surprise here was that Carolina did as much as they did on offense. But the Rams still very dangerous. I think at the current moment, they're, I think, the betting favorite to win the Super Bowl. That's how people feel about the Rams, even though they're going to have to go on the road this week and maybe the rest of the playoffs. But certainly a dangerous team. The defense surprisingly let Carolina scare the Rams for basically 3 hours. But Matthew Stafford, the front runner for MVP, that makes sense. You could argue Puka Nacua might be the best player in football right now. That's how great he is.
Yeah.
And I was encouraged. Adams didn't do a ton with his 13 targets, 5 catches, 72 yards. He didn't score a touchdown. But just to see him healthy and running routes after the time he had missed, he's obviously a key piece. When you have an offense that's concentrated as much as it is on the stars that they have, to be playing down a guy like Adams is critical. So one of the things I wanted to look at is just, does Devontae Adams look healthy, right? And I thought he passed that test, even if he had a substandard game by his usual, lofty expectations. But I think the Rams are certainly going to be in the NFC Championship game. No offense to the Bears. We'll talk about them in a minute. But Carolina, I thought this was going to be a blowout. It obviously wasn't. And I'm encouraged by what the Panthers did on the other side. But the Rams, the offense, I thought business as usual. They put up 21 first downs. They put up over 400 yards of offense. That should be enough to win most weeks, and it was barely on Saturday.
I did think this game was going to be closer than the spread. I thought the Panthers would be able to cover here, but I didn't. It was even more competitive than I thought, especially because, Scott, and we'll talk about the Panthers more in a second, they were making some mistakes on their side that I think, like, oh, man, you can't muff a punt like that. You can't have that interception if you're Bryce Young and not get obliterated by this Rams team, but they were able to overcome those mistakes. And I think part of the performance from their defense, as we're talking about the Rams offense here, has to be mentioned. The strength of the Panthers obviously are not a good defense, but they do have some strengths. And I think the strengths are at the cornerback position and Derrick Brown up in the front. And I think that they were able to have some success when you're looking at the ground game. Like the Rams weren't able to just run them over on the ground, which I think that's a Derrick Brown thing. But also that 13 targets, 5 catches for Davante Adams. Mike Jackson is a guy that didn't get enough credit for the Panthers this year. I was actually talking with Nate through those games, and like we did an all underappreciated team on Football 301, and Mike Jackson was a guy that I wanted to bring to the table, and he was like my first guy off the list at cornerback. He's had a really nice year for this Panthers team. J.C. Horn obviously is a really good player as well, has had a strong season, and when he went out with an injury and didn't finish the game, I think the Panthers obviously. I know there's no moral victory. Nobody wants a pat on the back. The guys that are on that team are hurting today. There's no question about it the last 2 days. But I think if you're a Panthers player, you got to be wondering, like, man, if J.C. Horn doesn't go down in that game, you know, and it's the pass along the right sideline there that Colby Parkinson catches from Matthew Stafford, like, are we talking about a potentially a different outcome in this game? Like, that is how close it was that I think you can imagine that, which to me, if you're a Panthers believer at all, that does feel pretty good that it was even close and competitive like this. Again, we'll talk more about the Panthers, but I thought that was actually an interesting game plan from the Rams here that they had attack the Panthers on the boundary with Davante Adams so much when, you know, number one, he's coming off injury, but number two, it's kind of the strength of this Panthers defense here.
And also just, man, what they did with Puka was just ridiculous. I mean, he gets 18 targets. He carries the ball 3 times. So 21 opportunities, 2 more touchdowns. I don't see any reason why you couldn't take Puka Nacua with the number one overall pick next year. Some people might think it's JSN. Yep. We saw running backs had a really strong fantasy season. But if you go to your draft lottery and get the, you know, number 7 pick, 9 pick, whatever, you're not getting Puka Nacua. He's going to be above the fold. And I think could easily be the number 1 or number 2 pick in fantasy leagues next year.
Yeah, when we did a mock draft on the final episode of Fantasy Football Live this year, I did take Puka Nacua with the first overall pick. And I think, obviously, you can't really go wrong with Bijan Robinson, but 100%, man, it's like Puka is just so automatic. 18 targets in this game, 10 catches, over 100 yards. He has the 2 touchdowns. He gets some rushing work as well. And yeah, it's just like if Matthew Stafford is back with this team next year, which I almost think he's played so well that I think even if they won the Super Bowl, which I'm a little more skeptical about the Rams as a contender than maybe the betting odds. We could talk about that more when we get to the Bears. I actually think the Bears offense matches up really well with this Rams defense, but we'll get to that in a second. I just think that, you know, and Matthew Stafford suffered a sprained index finger. There was a lot of a finger gate with these quarterbacks here this weekend, but I even think that Stafford, even if they win the Super Bowl, if that does happen, I don't know if he's retiring on, you know, quote, on top because he's playing at such a high level. If Stafford's back next year, I have no hesitation ranking Puka Nacua as the number one overall player because those opportunities are just so automatic for him. I do think if we're poking holes in the Rams' status as a contender, and I think this transitions us into what the Panthers did here in this game, number one, they do have a special teams problem. I think there's no question about that. They fired their special teams coach during the season, so I think that's part of it. The other part of it is I still think this secondary for the Rams is a problem, and Carolina really exposed that exactly kind of in the ways that Joel and I talked about on the preview show, which is they've got these big perimeter wide receivers in Tetero McMillan and Jalen Coker, shout out, 9 catches, 134 yards and a touchdown. They went to work on those corners, and I do think that some of the teams remaining in the NFC playoff field can probably get them the same way.
Yeah, McVay may eventually pay the price for not having up to par special teams. The Rams are a team that just likes to kick the ball deep, and to take it to 35 will allow that, which is goes against the way most teams play. We should also mention, by the way, Blake Corum once again got the double digit touches in this game. So that's what, 5 out of 6 games he's done that. It was basically a 60-40 split between Williams and Corum. So they've made both of those guys viable. But if the Rams do get eliminated at some point, you're going to wonder if that hole in special teams, and what is that? I mean, that's just the bottom 15, 10, 15, 20% of your roster. A lot of times that's depth. Sometimes that's coaching. Some of the best coaches in the NFL history, you know, Belichick had a special teams background. We know John Harbaugh made his bones in special teams before he became a head coach. But you wonder at some point if that tax will have to be paid by the Rams.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I think is just going to be in the back of your mind. But let's talk about the Panthers here in this game. Like I said, I just thought it was about as good of a performance as you possibly could have imagined from this Panthers team overall. And specifically, I'm curious what you thought about on the offensive side here. I think Bryce Young, like the first interception, that's a throw he can't make. I know that Jalen Coker got some crap for that about like, did he stop running his route? Like, no, he settled in the right spot. I think Bryce probably didn't come off of it fast enough or threw it into the wrong window. But other than that, I thought he was, you know, it was a typical Bryce Young game, but man, the receivers really shined here. McMillan made several big plays. Jalen Coker obviously was awesome. People that listen to this show know I love Coker as a player, and I'm kind of happy that the whole world got to see why. Like he's not just some like, oh, cute UDFA. He's really like a legitimately good player, and I'm very excited about him in 2026 and beyond. But what are your feelings about Carolina coming out of this game?
Yeah, you got to start with Coker. So the last sight we see of him is 9 for 134 and a touchdown on 12 targets. Shout out Holy Cross, as you mentioned, undrafted from a non-traditional football school. Unfortunately, because he has this game, you got to remember with the playoff games, they're all island games. We're all watching them together communally on social media. We're sharing, we're exchanging. And so when everybody comes to Coker's name in draft season, even in early spring, best ball season, all that stuff, they're going to think of what he did, the way he ended the season. I mean, he was quasi-playable down the stretch in the regular fantasy season. Then he has his best game of his young NFL career in the playoffs. So I wonder if he's going to be a helium guy next year. Justified, of course. Also, if he gets the Matt Harmon check of approval, we know how much that influences the market. There's no way to avoid that. So I want to draft Coker next year. I'm excited about Coker. I just wish he had done this a little quieter, or maybe without the whole world watching him. We also have to – the two questions we can't get away from. Obviously, the backfield, Rico Dowdle had a moment, then he fell off. They didn't really get a running game going. Dowdle is a free agent, so I'm not sure how they're going to handle that. Hubbard had the breakout year last year. They'll have to sort through that. Bryce Young, can he be a plus quarterback? Can he be even a league average quarterback? I was optimistic after the way he ended the previous season. For the most part, that optimism was not rewarded. He played well here. He played well at moments, but just not enough consistency. Too many weeks, you'd look at Bryce Young and you'd be like, oh, he's projected to throw like 180 yards today. I have McMillan interest. I hope he gets half of that. He might. And Tet McMillan certainly looked like the guy. He justified where he was drafted, and he's a right answer for sure. But if this team's going to go anywhere, I think Canales is the right answer. Bryce Young needs to be at least league average, if not a little bit better. He's obviously not getting taller. That's going to limit how he sees the field and certain plays he can make. But if McMillan's going to be a star, and I think that's likely, if Coker's going to be a very solid number two, and we've seen the growth of that, the possibility of that the last few weeks, Canales, the coach we like, it's all in place for Young. And he's got some mobility too. A lot of his fantasy value last year was tied to late rushing touchdowns, which we weren't sure if they'd carry over this year. But I think next season is probably the fork in the road season for the Panthers with Bryce Young, where they have to decide, is this a long-term thing, or do we have to start searching, drafting, free agency, whatever it is? And I realize there's not a lot of quarterbacks out there, you know, to the point that they're backups that people are hoping maybe could be starters next year for other teams. But we're really close to getting to the fork in the Bryce Young road.
I think that's very fair. And you're right. Like Bryce is not getting any taller and his arm is not getting any stronger. You know, like physically he is what he is. And that's why he was sort of an interesting pick at number one overall, because he does have some great playmaking instincts. But I think for him to get to be that like consistently clearly above average quarterback, I think he has to become like an elite pre and post snap processor, which I don't think he's been so far. I think having a third year in Canales' offense actually will help him a lot. I think that will be good. You like the consistency of that for a player like this, just become, you know, in and out, familiar with the system, know it like the back of your hand. I think that will really help. I also think that the supporting cast needs to be incredibly strong around him. I think we're good with these two receivers. I think we could Leggett, I think we're in a tough spot with that. We could probably add more of a needle moving third receiver, although I think they like what Jimmy Horn has done for them as a speed motion guy. Oh, man, by the way, Jimmy Horn catches that pass at the end of the game. they might be able to continue to make the drive there like that. So that, again, maybe a third receiver, maybe more of a needle moving tight end here, which will complicate the question from a fantasy standpoint. And the other thing I think we should talk about, you mentioned Rico Dowdle. Not only is he a free agent, he had comments after the game essentially alluding to his lack of opportunities down the stretch and in this game will influence his decision when it comes to free agency. He wants to be the main guy. I don't know if he's going to get an opportunity to be a main guy somewhere, even though I think he is a really good back, but certainly sounds like a guy who is probably moving on here. You know, are they going to keep the door open for Jonathan Brooks, their former second round pick who's coming, who didn't play all this season because he tore his ACL last year and had a torn ACL in college? The offensive line lost Ikem Ekwonu early in this game to a serious knee injury. He's probably in doubt early in next season. Cade Mays is a free agent. He's been playing really well for them at center this season. So yeah, man, I think there's a lot of questions specifically in like the identity. Like, it's funny. We think about the Panthers, we think about the run game, and Canales talks about the run game all the time. And I think they were awesome running the football this year. I think I actually have more questions about what the future of the run game and the offensive line looks like than I do what the passing game looks like, just because I'm really bullish on these two wideouts here.
Yeah, me too. I still 27th in points, 27th in yards on offense this year. That has to get better. You mentioned the possibility of maybe them adding an impact tight end. Now, we don't have the great 2025 tight end class repeating from everything I've seen. They're going to be interesting players coming to the league, but we just had a year we're going to look back on. So, and we're going to talk about one of those players in a minute. But, I would love to see Bryce Young have that easy button to press with somebody who can dominate, who's the tallest guy in the field. That would certainly help. Dowdle is going to be 28 next year, so it's – you know, he's lightly used. He hardly played for the Cowboys. Sorry, producer Colin. He had that one kind of quasi-breakout year there. And then this year he does get over 1,000, but he wasn't used a lot down the stretch. Didn't play much in this game. So you just wonder if he's going to land somewhere else. The good news, though, nobody in the NFC South looks that great. I mean, the Falcons just fired their coach. It's kind of a fork in the road year for the Buccaneers. The Saints are on the upswing, but it's not like they're a juggernaut by any means. We're just happy that they were a competitive football team at the end of the year, and I think they had a 4-game winning streak until they lost the final week. Shuck looks like somebody who could be a pretty good player for them. We were all excited Chris Olave had that season, but I don't see why 10 wins wouldn't win this division. I think 9-8 would give you a puncher's chance. You know, the 8-9 was kind of a fluke. It's hard because they all play each other. Somebody usually is going to get to a winning record, but I think the NFC South is going to be gloriously and in a fun way, chaotic and messy and screwy and you know, all those things it was this year. I think we're going to see a lot more of that next year, and Carolina will be right in the middle of it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm weirdly excited to watch that NFC South mess play out in the offseason and into next regular season as well. Let's go to the next game that happened on Saturday, the NFC North matchup, Packers 27, Bears 31. And let's talk about those Chicago Bears, man. I don't know how you felt, but at halftime of that game, I was ready to be let down. I was like, oh man, unbelievable. We got that great start from the Panthers-Rams game, unexpected. And now like the Bears are going to get blown out here, but the Bears do what they've done all season, which is claw back. They don't quit. They fight. They get crazy in the fourth quarter. This from Next Gen Stats, from 6 minutes and 51 seconds in the second quarter to 2:59 in the fourth quarter. The Bears win probability never exceeded 25%, reaching a minimum of 3%. Yeah, this is what the Bears have been all season. I think it was a really impressive win. I'm curious what you think about some of the nuances of the performance here from Chicago. You can take this to Caleb Williams, who had 300 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, one of the best throws you're ever going to see on 4th and 8 to Rome Odunze. You can take this to Colson Loveland, who was a monster in this game. You could take it to the Ben Johnson of it all. What are your thoughts about a wild Bears game here on Saturday night?
Yeah, the Packers got to be killing themselves because they should have beaten Chicago 3 times. Instead, they lost the second game in the regular season to a crazy comeback, and then they lose these, you know, the same type of game in the playoffs. Again, you know, their Chicago's win expectancy, as you said, getting just below the zero level, and somehow they bailed this game out. When I was rewatching this game halfway through, it's like I'm trying to remind myself Chicago actually wins this game because it looks like such a loss. Right? But to me, the story. And again, this screws it up for fantasy next year. But Colson Loveland, could you keep it down a little bit? You know,
oh 15, no.
Everybody was back. I know Odunze might not be 100% or he might not be full sharpness, but he's in uniform and Burns in uniform and Moore's in uniform. All the chips are in the middle. You got to win. and he gets a 15 target game. He gets 8 for 137, and that doesn't include the 2-point conversion that they had to have. So it's an, I always say, you know, goal line equity is a lot of times, you know, described in those. I want to see who's targeted on 2-point plays, because those the things matter to me too, because they could lead to future touchdown opportunities. So when Chicago had to have it, Colston Loveland was their guy. He looked like a totally different. We see this a lot with rookies. Sometimes it just takes a while for them to get their feet wet, to get their confidence, to get the trust of their teammates, whatever it is. But Loveland looked like a different player over the final third of the season. I went from, okay, he's definitely a top 10 tight end next year, to, man, could I rank him 7? Could I rank him 6? Now it's like, I have to leave a draft next year with Colston Loveland. I'm not going to sit that out. If this is real, if you know, it wasn't that long ago, I was wondering if like Ty Warren was the better player. And not like Warren did anything wrong. I realized, you know, the quarterback run out was unfortunate, and the Colts offense the last 6 or 8 weeks had like no chance. I don't hold any of that against Ty Warren, but Colston Loveland looks like a monster. He's somebody who's going to be the tight end one in fantasy some year. It'd be maybe irresponsible to expect it next year, but, you know, look, Kelsey may retire. We may be at kind of at a sea change point for tight ends. You're going to want to be on this ship. And again, he was, I thought, the most dynamic player on the field on Saturday night.
Dynamic is the right word for it. The usage for him, you know, they line him up and get him isolated against corners. They line him up and get him isolated against linebackers. He's incredible. Like, to me, I think the conversation with him begins, you probably can't rank him over Trey McBride, but I think it begins at tight end too. Like, I could, is it crazy to rank him over Brock Bowers? We don't even know what the Raiders situation is going to look like next year. I mean, it's probably going to be pretty good, you know, taking Fernando Mendoza number one overall, but we don't even know who the head coach is. We don't even know who's calling plays right now. And I just think this Bears, to me, the lesson coming out of this game and the lesson coming out of this season for the Bears, regardless of what happens next week, and I really do think they have a chance against this Rams team. I think the way that Chicago wants to attack over the middle, they have big body dynamic receivers on the outside, even if those guys aren't always perfect, and they were not perfect completely in this game. I mean, Luther Burden runs the wrong route on a dagger concept on the first interception for Caleb Williams, and it was still like not the best throw in the world, but that's what's happened all year with these wideouts, is they've been up and down learning a very complicated new offense. Caleb Williams has been up and down. He was obviously very up and down in this game, but to me, the trajectory, even if it isn't every single snap consistently going up, it is trending in the right direction for me to be really excited about this Bears offense. And Colston Loveland is the guy that I would imagine right now, if we're thinking about 2026 fantasy drafts, will go off the board first, and I think deservedly so. He is such a dynamic talent, and I will want exposure to him. I will want exposure to the wideouts, especially if DJ Moore moves on in the offseason. But I mean, that is almost like we're going to have the same conversation again next week, Scott, because they won this game. And I think they showed you all the reasons why they're such a gritty, well-built operation under Ben Johnson and with Caleb Williams, a quarterback. And I don't know about you, I thought the speech that Williams gave in the locker room, where he got emotional talking about the coaching staff, I thought that to me almost made me more excited than anything I saw on the field on Saturday, because I just think there's a real, it's like, oh, Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson, what's the dynamic going to be like? This is clearly a team that really believes and is bought in on what they're doing right now.
Yeah, one of the big stories of the NFL season was adults in the room in Jacksonville, adults in the room in New England, adults in the room in Chicago. And they were the three of the most improved teams and all playoff teams and all fantasy fun teams. And it's, you know, again, getting the coach right, getting the play designer right. Caleb Williams taking a big step up in his second season, using his athleticism, but making better decisions, getting the sack rate trimmed down. And just one more word on Loveland. When you're going to take a tight end with a proactive pick, you have to ask yourself, could this player lead the team in targets? Could he lead the team in touchdowns? Could he be the guy they go to on a gotta-have-it third-down, fourth-down play? Or I mentioned that 2-point conversion late in that game, and Loveland checks all of those boxes. Plus, he was drafted by the new infrastructure there. You know, some of the other players were inherited, so you know they had big plans for him. And isn't it fun? You look at player profile, or who was his comp? The number one comp to Loveland was Trey McBride coming out of college, and now here we are after McBride's off the board. We at least have Loveland on speed dial. Yeah, probably. I guess he would land in the top 5 tight ends next season. I think that's reasonable for him.
Yeah, destiny top 5 tight ends, no question about it. And yeah, again, I Caleb Williams, that throw to Roma Dunze, I just got to say it again. It is one of the best throws you're ever going to see in your life. I mean, the situation, it's 4th and 8. How he gets that throw off is unbelievable. He's no feet on the ground. It's an insane throw. And that's like where he is at this point. He is going to have some horrible misses that drive you crazy. He's going to hold the ball a little bit. He's going to be a little too slow to trigger on things when they're open, especially when it's the primary read. If that stuff can ever get better, I mean, he is going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's not one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now. He is an up and down player, but it's like cons, he's going to miss some throws that are going to drive you crazy. Pros, when he hits the throws, they're the best throws you've ever seen in your entire life. Like, that's who Caleb Williams is right now.
Yeah, I mean, his sack rate went down from 10.8% to 4%. That's huge improvement. And his highlight tape might be the best highlight tape in the league right now. Great the arm talent is. And we're looking at, 6 straight games with multiple touchdown passes. Some of the throws he made in that first Green Bay comeback win to force the overtime, the game winner to DJ Moore, those were, you know, suitable for framing throws. And then he made a bunch of them in this game. And Caleb, you know, the athleticism to extend plays, the willingness to keep his eyes downfield, the discipline to do that while not having the sack problem he had his rookie year. Yeah, Caleb got better this year, but it's still, he could easily be like a 5,000 yard passer. He could be like a 35, 38 touchdown guy. He hasn't become that player yet, but I think it's all in play for him. All the arrows pointing up, he's got the right guy orchestrating the offense, and now they're going to get to fill in pieces around him. It's just, you know, after a 5-12 season first year, and again, I mean, he got dumped 68 times. You just can't live that way, but I'm excited. I feel like Caleb, He's not there yet, but man, he jumped a bunch of stairs this year. I mean, he made what you want is things moving in the right direction. You want to see the improvement. You want to see the better pocket awareness, and he's just checking so many boxes. And sometimes he's just going to win because he's such an exceptional athlete, and he can make throws that we're talking about. You know, Josh Allen can make, Caleb Williams can make, maybe Stafford can make. You know, 3 or 4 guys can make certain plays in this league. Caleb Williams is on that list.
Let's talk about the Packers here, who I think their quarterback had an excellent game here as well. We showed the tweet earlier that a quarterback hasn't had this type of performance since Josh Allen and lost in the playoffs when we're talking about that 2021 divisional game. So that's where they are. I mean, there was a lot of talk after the game, like, is Matt LaFleur going to get fired? I understand why those conversations, you know, might come up here, but at the same time, the reports from today from Adam Schefter are though that they're going to try to work out a deal in the coming days to keep Matt LaFleur, which I think that's the correct call. Look, I mean, I am the type of person, Scott, that is has started to roll my eyes at when we defend a coach, we immediately just go to, well, their side of the ball is good. And like, oh, look at the Packers EPA numbers. I think that's nonsense because you're the head coach of the football team and the football team does need to be better. But I think we can also use our brains here and realize there's a lot of context for this Packers season. You know, losing Tucker Kraft and Micah Parsons, like, those are two of your best players on the team. And the whole reason they went out and got Micah Parsons, Scott, was so that they didn't have to be the team that lost in the first round of the playoffs because they would get that closer. Well, they don't have that guy. Like, that was the whole point of this season. And obviously, like, that happens. It's a reason. I don't think it's an excuse. I still think Matt LaFleur is the right guy to captain this ship. I think Jordan Love is the right quarterback. I think any conversation outside of that is probably one we can, I don't know, maybe you disagree, but I think it's mostly just like stuff made for talk shows, which is not what this show is. But what do you think the Packers need to do in the offseason? Like, what should they be focused on this year?
First of all, LaFleur, totally agree. This is the guy who's won 65% of his games and gone to the playoffs every year but one since he took over this job in 2019. Now, I get why maybe Baltimore moved on from Harbaugh, or, you know, all the Tomlin discussions we get, because they've been there for 2 decades. You know, sometimes you just need a different voice. You know, this is not – LaFleur hasn't been there so long that it's like they're tuning him out or anything. It'd be a folly to get rid of him. And I realize, look, some people are like, why are you throwing so aggressively at the end of the game? Just let Josh Jacobs, you know, control it and take it home. Well, maybe Jacobs wasn't healthy. They did move the ball into field goal range. It's a right answer. Well, LaFleur is a right answer. What did they lose this year, right? They lost Parsons, their most important defensive player. They lost Kraft, the most important part of their passing game. And then Love missed a chunk of the season down the stretch. And then they finally had the mail in that last game. You know, Malik Willis. And, you know, you want a proof that Matt LaFleur is a great coach? Look how decent this offense was with Malik Willis. We talked about backup quarterbacks maybe being starters for somebody else. He's a free agent this year. They were a good team with Malik Willis playing quarterback. Now, of course, Willis deserves a lot of credit for that, and he's probably going to get a big bag of money for it. And, you know, good for you. You deserve it. I can't wait to see him be a starter next year. But Matt LaFleur's fingerprints are all over that. So, you know, I would say with Green Bay, keep doing what you're doing. Hope you run a little bit luckier with the injuries. And it's going to be a very competitive division. Obviously, everybody had a winning record this year. The Vikings, what, 5 in a row to end the season? If not for quarterback problems, they'd be in the playoffs. Detroit will still be good again. Can't wait to see who fills their offensive coordinator chair with a lot of interesting candidates floating around. But now Green Bay loves the right answer. LaFleur's the right answer. We saw Christian Watson start to play better down the stretch when he was healthy. I know Romeo Doubs is a free agent. I would like to see LaFleur maybe lean on his better players when he identifies them in the receiver room. I think sometimes he's a little bit platoon happy, but they ran unlucky with injuries. For them to get to the playoffs and basically have a playoff game theirs to be won, Chicago took it away from them. That happens. But I still think this is a successful season for the Packers.
That's where I come down as well here. And like I said, I think there are legit things you can criticize LaFleur on. I agree with your point about the platooning in the receiver room. Doubs is a free agent. I wonder if he's back. I think he might have played himself, especially again, great final game here from him. 8 catches, 124 yards, and they were just smoking the Bears in man coverage all day, and Doubs is a big part of that. I wonder if he's played himself into a bigger deal elsewhere, and then we could talk about a four receiver room of Jaden Reed, Christian Watson, Matthew Golden, and Dontavian Wicks is back. So I think there's enough depth there. You drafted Savion Williams last year. I think he's mostly a gadgety player, but you know, we'll see about that. I think actually you mentioned Josh Jacobs. That's one thing that is, I think, with LaFleur, the biggest criticism I would give him is that I think at times he's coached this team with a lack of awareness of where the team is. And I think specifically in the run game, we don't talk about this enough because Josh Jacobs was mostly good in fantasy this year because he scored a bunch of touchdowns. I think the run game left a lot to be desired throughout the course of the year. And I think some of that has to do with Josh Jacobs constantly playing through injuries, which is great. Like, he's a warrior. That's awesome. But I think it hurt the team at times. You know, maybe you need like I think Emmanuel Wilson, who's a free agent, had a couple of nice moments this year, but maybe you need a better second pitch at running back to give like a true platoon here. I think you could look at some of the offensive line additions that did not work out for them. Maybe you think about that. But that to me is, from what I've got my eyes on this offseason, I think especially if Kraft is back and is close to 100%, you're good. Like in the pass game, you're good. And Kraft being there really helps the run and pass game in a lot of different ways. I'm not saying like you need to move on from Josh Jacobs or anything, but I would think about like, we can't do that again, which is just when Jacobs is healthy, we're saddling him up with 19 carries, one for Wilson, one for Brooks, like kind of your secondary guys, and just slam his head into the wall over and over again for 3 to 3.5 yards per carry. And that's what I think did them in a lot in the second half was, you're playing a little too conservative, and that allowed a team like the Chicago Bears to get back into the game twice against you this season.
Can't ignore in Jacobs' seventh season, his efficiency stats all went down. Yards per carry, yards per catch, a success rate, and he wasn't the same player in the second half of the year. So not just the injuries in season, but you just wonder how much of the workload he's absorbed for 7 years. When does that come due? I don't think I'll be proactive drafting Jacobs next year, although I still think he'll be an effective player, but you raise a great point. Is it time for this backfield that was usually like an 85-15 or a 90-10? Is it time for maybe a 65-35 or even a 60-40 if they have a decent number two running back?
Yeah, maybe that's the guy they wanted Marshawn Lloyd to be, and he was just never healthy at any point during his NFL career. So I think at some point you can look at that, and I think that will happen this offseason. Okay, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about the games from Wild Card Weekend right after this. All right, we are back. We're continuing to recap an absolutely electric slate of Wild Card Weekend games. Let's talk Bills 27, Jaguars 24. This was, I think, the best game and the most enjoyable game of the Sunday slate here. Maybe not quite as electric and crazy as some of the Saturday games, but still a really excellent one that included Josh Allen, to me, just taking this game over. Scott, I wonder what some of the nuances you saw here, but I expected Jacksonville to be able to shut down the Bills' ground game I talked about that with Joel on the preview show. That happened. 15 carries, 46 yards for James Cook. And ultimately, it was just Josh Allen putting, and not all of the reason why they won. Obviously, the defense made some great plays on the other side of it as well. But this was a game that if they were going to win, Buffalo against a really good Jaguars team, not just like a, oh, cutesy, they're here, whatever. Oh, that's so nice. Like, no, this is a good Jaguars team. If they were going to win, Josh Allen was going to have to be Superman. He was Superman in this game.
He sure was. This was a blast of a football game. 7 lead changes. And after a little bit of a slow start from both of the offenses, the teams really got going in the second half, particularly the fourth quarter, just haymaker after haymaker. And then you had strategy decisions, and you had fourth down decisions, and you had game theory decisions. Should Buffalo score right away? No, don't score right away. Just get to the 1-inch line, run some more clock. And I hate the way the game ended. It was such a fun Jacksonville season that I hate to see Trevor Lawrence throw a bad pick to end the game. But I expected this was going to be a blast of a game. I expected eventually it got to 51 total points. It took a while. It took 4 touchdowns in the fourth quarter between the teams to get home. But we eventually got there. Now, with Buffalo, look, I realize everybody knows quarterback's the most important position in sports. But Buffalo can't win if Josh Allen isn't great every week. If Josh Allen's good against Denver, they're going to lose. If Josh Allen's good against Houston or Pittsburgh or New England, whoever they might meet in the subsequent week, if they get past Denver, they're going to lose. We saw Josh Allen was sacked 8 times, I think it was, in the Houston game. He had struggles against Philadelphia in the game that they lost not long ago. So, look, I love Khalil Shakir. And man, shout out to a guy who catches all 12 of his targets. Of course, they only went for 82 yards. This team relying on Gabe Davis, relying on Tyrell Shavers, relying on Brandon Cooks. It's just, where are the other guys? And I like Dalton Kincaid for what he is. I like Dawson Knox as a second tight end. But you know, eventually they got away with it in this game. I think eventually it's going to catch up to them. I don't think they're going to win the AFC, even though everybody's petrified of Buffalo. You know, I'm a New England fan. I'm on text threads with the Patriots, and we're talking about, well, at least they can't play Buffalo until the AFC Championship game. Would you rather see Denver or Buffalo win that game? And I'm not looking by any means past what New England's next game, because they're going to play a tough opponent. But, you know, Buffalo, it's just like, you look at the team, they're flawed. And then Josh Allen like erases everything else.
Exactly. Like the stat we're showing on the screen right now, 26 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, the best ratio in NFL history in the NFL postseason from Lev Akabis, I'm going to say. I probably might be butchering that, but it's a great stat. And that really goes, it was just funny. Like the whole paying attention to this stuff is stupid. But, you know, again, on the talking head shows all week, it's like, well, if the Bills lose this game, it's on Josh Allen no matter how it goes. And then the opening stanza of the game, CBS, which I got some thoughts about some of the stuff going on at CBS, but specifically one thing happening at CBS, but we'll table that for another conversation. They show the graphic of Josh Allen in the playoffs, first in this, first in this, first in this, first in that, first in this, and then by the end of the game, it's like, well, he's added another thing to his playoff ledger, a fourth quarter comeback final, you know, 2-minute drill win here. So this is, yeah, you're right. They go as he goes, and he has been absolutely excellent. He had a 133.1 passer rating when trailing versus Jacksonville, as PFF shows us here. But that's it. Like, it's how good can Josh Allen be? That is the question. I do think the defense deserves some credit here. Tre'Davious White, that was pretty cool to see him get that last interception. Shaq Thompson had a great play on Trevor Lawrence's first interception over the middle. That was a really well read out play by him. So the defense is definitely a big part of this. But yeah, offensively, it's about Josh Allen. It just is. I do think Joe Brady had a nice game. I think they used Khalil Shakir as an answer to pressure from a tough Jacksonville front. That was good to see. And they designed a couple of shot plays down the field to the tight end. Big weekend for fake screens as well. DJ Moore scored off a fake screen for the Bears. Kincaid scored off a fake screen. So I think Brady gets a lot of crap. And Joe Brady, I do think, had himself a nice game against Jacksonville here. So, yeah, like, this is the Bills' story. It has been that way all year. I think they're good enough to win a Super Bowl, but it's going to be tough with this formula for sure. You just are relying on your quarterback being absolutely perfect. I think right now they have the right guy to rely on that. I want to talk about the Jaguars here with you, Scott, because this is going to be one of the most interesting teams to talk about in the offseason, because I think we all want to bet on this team with Liam Cohen and what they showed on offense. What does the distribution look like for this team next year, both in the passing game and in the run game too? Because Travis Etienne is a free agent here.
Yeah, one of the things I had circled is Parker Washington, hashtag good. He was their best player. He was their best player in this game. 7 for 107 and a touchdown on 12 targets. He has 12, 9, 10, and 10 targets his last four games. And this is with Thomas being healthier. This is with Brent Strange being part of the offense. This is with Etienne having his wings spread. So obviously next year they'll have Hunter back, and you know, kind of a washout year for him. He was unproductive, and then he got hurt. He missed half the season. And Thomas was one of the big bust players of the year, NFL and fantasy. It's just, you know, they added Myers in the middle of the year. He was a big help to them, and they extended him. But Parker Washington is too good not to play, and he's just not. A lot of times people just look at these tertiary receivers. Oh, they're slot guys. Oh, they're limited route tree guys. I see Washington winning downfield an awful lot of the time. And yet he can win on drags. He can win on quick passes, on outs and stuff. I want to see more of Parker Washington. He's somebody, I think, unlike maybe a Loveland, who he was too great. And you see Loveland at maybe the top of the tree in Chicago. I think Washington's going to be screened by enough other players in Jacksonville that I think he's just somebody. Circle them in your mind or in your notebook or in your spreadsheets or whatever you start doing your preseason prep. I think he'll be on a kind of quasi-sleeper value list, whatever you want to call it. But he's somebody I can see drafting proactively, even understanding he's probably gained a few rounds in the last few weeks. He's somebody I'm excited about.
No question. And this is going to be one of those ambiguous target trees where I think there will be two kind of big talking points about Jacksonville, the Jacksonville wide receivers in the offseason. It's one, is BTJ going to be a trade candidate? I think he settled into an effective role for them, but it's a pretty limited role in the offense where it's X receiver only duties. And you're not going to funnel a lot of targets to that position in this offense. And it's kind of hard to deny that they had a lot of good work with Myers. They had a lot of good work with Parker. Parker Washington is, I'm with you, 100% legit good. I reposted my scouting report on him from Reception Perception during the game, and I kind of called him like a Bud Light Golden Tate player. And that depends on what do you remember Golden Tate as? Do you remember him as like the Lions pop gun slot receiver? Or do you remember him as like a downfield contested catch player with the Seattle Seahawks early in his career? He's looked a lot more like that, the latter version of that so far. So, and not even Bud Light, just full ABV Golden Tate is what he's kind of looked like. And I think he's got enough staying power here. That's going to be the talking point. Is BTJ a trade candidate? And also, is Travis Hunter going to play more cornerback next year than wide receiver? Because that corner room did kind of let them down in a big spot here. Maybe neither of those things happen. Maybe one does. Maybe both do. We don't know. But I will say I'm definitely taking my shots at these pass catchers in fantasy next year, regardless of kind of who's on the docket, because it's just a good offense, man. And I think there's a lot of sustainability here. And you want to take your shots on ambiguous situations and good offenses.
I know Thomas did have a touchdown in this game, but he only had two targets in a all the chips in the middle, we win or we go home game. That's really unsettling to me. It's so funny you mentioned Golden Tate. I was out and about in the greater Detroit area, and there's at one point I was playing poker, and there was a debate about how good Golden Tate was. This went on for like 20 minutes. People are passionate. People have different opinions on Golden Tate. I'm in the plus side. I remember him as a very good player, as one of those guys who his best seasons, he was good enough to get like Pro Bowl consideration. He was never going to be the best receiver in football. A lot of times he was the number two guy in his own team. But I remember him as somebody who I was always happy to draft in fantasy. And I think that if Washington can become even some version of that, 80% of that, 90% of that, I think that would be a big win. I'm afraid I've been spooked from Thomas that I can't draft him next year unless he really sinks like a stone. And I thought into this year, I wanted all the Brian Thomas. I feel lucky I didn't get more shares of him just for how my draft slots fell. But they are not, they're just going to go to who's open, who has good matchups, who's producing. They're not going to be like, okay, Brian Thomas is back 8 to 10 targets a night. Doesn't work that way. And, again, I talked about earlier adults in the room, and, I mentioned Chicago, New England, and Jacksonville. It's just so nice that Liam Cohen is a right answer here. And they have a team, finally we saw the Trevor Lawrence over the past 2 or 3 months be the star that he was projected to be. He was obviously very good in fantasy and will be a proactive pick. What's your gut on ETN? Because did he do enough for them to make a proactive pitch at him? Or do they just think, okay, running back, it's fungible. Tootin had moments, including in this game. that maybe he can be their starter next year? What do you anticipate with their backfield?
I think they'll have a conversation to potentially get him back. I actually think they're probably kicking themselves coming out of this game that they didn't run the ball more. 75% of Bashel Tutten's carries went for 10 plus yards, 20% for ETN. I think they probably could have stuck with that a little bit more in the second half. But my one thought too would be, you know, again, free agent, probably want to have a conversation to bring him back because he was that good for them this year. And, you know, I don't know what the contract looks like, but I also think they do need to think about the offensive line as well. I'd love to see them get like really strong up front, much like the Bucs were under Liam Cohen's 1 year there. And I think that can actually make this offense feel even more consistent because it wasn't a consistent offense by any means this year. But I think the run game was a bright spot. I'd like to see ETN back with this team. Do you kind of feel quickly the same way?
I mean, continuity is always what I want when we're talking about good players. So that's my preference. But yeah, I'm not sure what they'll do.
No, neither am I. All right, we are going to take another quick break. We come back. We've got two more games to recap right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to recap Wild Card Weekend here. Let's get to the next game. 49ers 23, Eagles 19. This wasn't maybe as insane as some of the other games, but I thought this was a really good, you know, heavyweight fight here between these two teams, neither of which are perfect, and I think both of them showed their flaws here, Niners and Eagles. But specifically with the Niners, man, I don't know how far they can go with some of the injuries that they've sustained on both sides of the ball. They lose George Kittle to a torn Achilles in this one. He was apparently smashing tequila after the game. I think that maybe started as a morning drink of tequila and then turned into a celebratory one as this game was won by his 49ers here. But yeah, I thought this was an awesome coaching job by both Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh in this particular game, and we've seen that all season long.
Yeah, you're stealing notes from my page. I have Saleh and Shanahan written in all caps with exclamation points. One of my favorite cheat codes in the NFL is taking a former head coach and getting him back to his coordinator roots. Steve Spagnuolo, Josh McDaniels, Robert Saleh is one of those guys, right? We'll see. Mike McDaniel will be an offensive coordinator probably for somebody next year and probably a great hire. I'd love to see him in Detroit. What Saleh did with the personnel they were missing, and I realize the Eagles have all sorts of dysfunction on offense. We'll have a long talk about that. But Shanahan, they vote for Coach of the Year and all the awards immediately after the season, so this game won't be considered. But man, if it could be considered, Shanahan's odds would go way up. The fact that they somehow stole this game against an Eagles team that probably was better on paper, healthier on paper, is a feather in the cap to this coaching staff. And pulling out the trick play, I always get mad when teams pull out trick plays when they don't need them in the regular season in games that are already decided. And I get, well, maybe you want to throw it on tape or have the window dressing. But I always think these are break glass in case of emergency plays. And they pulled out the Jennings to McCaffrey pass at the exact right time when Purdy was kind of struggling and the pass rush was getting to him. And although Purdy's pocket movement on that final touchdown pass was dreamy too, it reminded me of a young Tom Brady. But I'm afraid the San Francisco story is going to end here. I know you'll get to the preview later this week with Joel, yeah. But just such a bad matchup with Seattle, who ate their lunch a couple of weeks ago, the 13-3 game that felt like it was 50-3. But yeah, San Francisco getting this win, big win for Shanahan, big win for Saleh. I'm just worried they don't have the personnel to advance. On the flip side, man, Philadelphia, great on the first possession. I think they have 8 first possession touchdowns this year, but they never really did anything after they got off script this year. And A.J. Brown having a disappointing season, a key drop late in the game. I realized they did turn the down over after that, so didn't lose the game for them. But he's been disengaged at times. No explosive plays in this passing game. Too many games you see Jalen Hurts not wanting to run or getting 5 yards an attempt. And I realize they've had one of the burdens they've had of being successful is they have to change offensive coordinators every year. This year, they're going to do it by choice probably. But team never felt cohesive, never felt, you know, a sense of joy, a sense of commonality there. And I don't know what it was because they were a really good first quarter team or first possession team this year, but they couldn't score in the second half. They didn't even get a yard, I don't think, in the Buffalo game. They somehow won that game anyway. They need to figure out why is everybody making the adjustments that we're not making them? Why do we not have answers in the late stages of this game? It's a lot of egg in the face in Philadelphia of not closing this game out. And really, it lands at the feet of the offense.
It was a pathetic game by the Philadelphia Eagles, and ultimately like a pretty pathetic season by that offense. I will not miss the 2025 Eagles offense by any means. This was a unit that was exhausting to talk about and exhausting to think like, oh my God, are they still going to somehow go on a playoff run? But that was just like nonsensical, man. What they've done on offense all year has just been, it's been so underwhelming. And I don't think it's one thing either. That's where I come back to like a real hesitation of what to do next if I'm Philadelphia, because guess what? They're not going to fire Kevin Petullo and then that's going to make everything better. It's just not. I think there are certain coordinators out there, certain offensive play callers that I think will fit with the personnel on this team, which by and large is still pretty good. But yeah, I mean, you got to ask a question about AJ Brown. Does he want to be there? I know his contract would be really tough to trade, but does he want to be there if they make a change at head coach? Is that a part of what he's irritated about? You know, there was a moment where AJ Brown and Nick Sirianni are jawing at each other on the sideline and Tom Brady's talking about what a great relationship they had, which I think we have, which is, you know, just kind of funny in the moment. Some of the best stuff they did this year was getting the ball to Dallas Goedert. That was the guy they wanted to trade in the offseason. You know, Saquon Barkley took a step back. The run game as a whole took a step back. Lane Johnson was hurt. I know that. Lane Johnson's getting up there, man. Lane Johnson's been in the league a long time. Jalen Hurts is what he is. Like, I think the questions are easier to point out than the answers will be to find for this Eagles team that has some questions to answer in the offseason. Like, are you bringing Dallas Goedert back? Jalen Phillips was a huge hit. Are you bringing him back? You know, they need to figure out that second cornerback position because the Niners picked on it in this game and teams picked on them all season in that regard. So I think a very dramatic offseason is coming for the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not saying like personnel changes, anything like that, but I will see what happens there. But one way or another, I think it's going to be a dramatic offseason for the Eagles.
For sure. Yeah, the worst YPA of Hurts' career. You mentioned Goddard, who's a free agent. He had 11 touchdowns regular season. He scores two more times. Love that running play they ran at the goal line. Also, this is a much lighter thing, but I get the idea there's still a lot of momentum to maybe get rid of the tush push. It almost got voted out last spring. I think this year it actually might happen. So how much will that hurt Philadelphia's offensive octane if that comes to pass? But at the end of the day, they're just not getting enough chunk plays. You need to get, and I realize the way the NFL is played now, the defenses are lighter and they don't want to get beat over the top and they want you to score on 14 play drives, not, you know, two play drives. But the fact that they couldn't get, I mean, we're seeing DeMarcus Robinson make splash plays on the other side of the field, right? I mean, where did that game come from? Yeah. Good for anybody who saw that coming. I certainly didn't. He looked terrific. He looked like he was 24 years old. But the fact that you have an offense with a Barkley, with a Hurts, with an A.J. Brown, with a Devonta Smith, and you couldn't get a 20-yard pass play to save your life, and that was ultimately, and this team, I'm not going to miss this offense either, 19th in points, 24th in yards, or I may have that flip-flop, but they were below league average in every offensive efficiency stat. That's, you know, this team reminded me a lot of the 2023 Eagles, right? Where they went to Tampa Bay and everybody's like, this team's going nowhere, and Tampa Bay, you know, smashed them off the face of the earth. I think we all knew that this Eagles team had limited upside because the offense eventually was going to play poorly.
Let's get to the final game of the weekend here. And it was definitely the least exciting game. Patriots 16, Chargers 3. I think there's a lot to talk about with the Chargers, but real quick, what did you see from the Patriots and what did you like? It was an up and down performance, I think, from the entire offense, but they did do enough to win with a few standout performances here.
Enough to win. Yeah. I mean, I didn't think Drake May was sharp to start the game, but he did enough in the second half and the defense was really good. Milton Williams on the defensive line, when he's in uniform, they're much more difficult to run against. And we saw the Patriots, who are generally not a sack team, had a sack party against Justin Herbert, who ends up getting sacked 60 times this year, just way too many. The offensive line obviously was hurt from day one in Los Angeles. And they're another team, much like Green Bay, that the run out they had just getting to the playoffs as a 7 seed and losing quasi-respectably has to be seen as a win. Obviously, they have the coach and quarterback, right? But they need better health and they have some tough questions to answer. You know, it was May's first playoff game. He probably was a little bit nervous. I still wish the Patriots had one more impactful player on offense. Interesting to see Ramondre Stevenson, maybe the most underrated player in football. We all love Travion Henderson. He's the home run hitter. Yeah, but
who's awesome?
You know, Ramondre's basically been their David Montgomery, right? You know, think of the better version of David Montgomery, maybe not the guy we saw at the end of this past season, but he got involved in the passing game as well. And You know, now that Williams is back on the defense, we'll see what happens with Christian Gonzalez, who may have been concussed. He was certainly injured late in that game. He's a guy they can't afford to miss in the secondary. But, you know, they can't all be Picasso's, Matt. Sometimes you do a color by numbers or an etch-a-sketch job. It's kind of what the Patriots did last night. But I just want to see Justin Herbert play with a good offensive line next year. Again, you can't – when your entire offensive line seems to get hurt, what are you going to do? But it was just so frustrating to see him running for his life, you know, more often than not, and even running proactively just to kind of escape. Sometimes he was their best runner on the Chargers offense, which should never be the case. But I love Herbert as a competitor. I love him as a talent. I just like to see him have a fair chance in 2026.
And I think that we could see some pretty big changes for the Chargers here. And like I joked with our producers, Colin, JB, and Jung, during this game that the 2025 Chargers felt like this sounds horrible, but it sounded like an old dog that, you know, it's time to say goodbye to. Okay, like they've run out of rope here. Okay, like it's time for the Chargers to go, because they just had nothing on offense with that offensive line. And I think Herbert did not play a good game here, but in some ways, what do you want him to do? You know, it's just, there's not a lot that you can do behind that offensive line, and the protection plan that they put together and the route concepts that go on top of that protection plan. And that's where I want to kind of go here, is that my initial reaction was, I can't imagine Jim Harbaugh moving on from Greg Roman, because, I mean, Greg Roman is a Harbaugh guy. He's been with both of the Harbaugh brothers. He was with Jim a long time ago. I always come back to, there was like a little media availability that they did, Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman, where they're like on the beach in LA, like outside of a camper, drinking beer, like they're, you know, broing out, whatever. But after the game, Harbaugh said, you know, he doesn't have the answer to that right now in terms of, is Greg Roman going to be the play caller next year? And that to me means, oh, he's out. I think now I'm almost expecting them to make a change. And I think that has to happen, because Roman is a guy that's not like offensively bad as an offensive coordinator, but when things aren't perfect, when you have a bad offensive line, then he becomes a net negative. And I would just like to see this offense, this quarterback, this skill position player, like you got $100 million in cap room. Like, this is the time to go and get that thing. And I do think you need better at play caller. And I imagine that is going to happen here.
Just one more thing about the Chargers. They didn't have a player get to 800 yards from scrimmage this year, which is almost impossible to be a successful offense with that stat being fact.
Too way too talented for that to happen. And I know the receiver room is crowded. I think it will be a little less crowded next year. I'd imagine Keenan Allen's probably not back, but they have some young, intriguing players there. Let's put a pin in this conversation and see what happens from a coaching perspective, because that, I think, will guide a lot of what we think about the Los Angeles Chargers heading into 2026 and beyond. Scott, hell of a show, buddy. Awesome to break this down with you. I was very excited to do it, and this conversation absolutely delivered. You're the man. Very excited to watch your Patriots go forward in the playoffs, and that's going to be a fun AFC and NFC field to break down. We're going to continue to do that all throughout the week here on this show, but as for our next program on Wednesday, Justin Boone is going to join me as we look back at what we got right and wrong about the wide receiver position this year. And we're going to open up the mailbag. Remember, fantasy mailbag, yahoosports.com, for some more dynasty debates. That's going to be live at 5 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. Until then, we are out.